What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Damage Report on a Thursday with Francesca Fiorentini. That is me. It is a fantastic Thursday. So excited to be here with you guys. So much to cover this Thursday. A lot of stuff. A little lighter later on in the show, but a lot of Trump goons to littering the rundown, truly polluting this very precious space. We got to talk about it. And so I'm very excited to have Mayor of Enfield, North Carolina, Rebel HQ contributor Mondale Robinson. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's good to see you again.
I'm okay. I'm hanging in there. It's been quite a few intense days, but I'm glad to have this distraction, I guess. To talk about the news, obviously, we're going to get into Republicans grilling Merrick Garland, Dark Garland. We're going to talk also about DeSantis cooking the books on his crime stats that he keeps on touting. Oh, yeah, the 50-year low. And then also, guys, Succession had a different ending in real life. That's right. Rupert Murdoch has resigned from the head of Fox. So interesting news there. And then a poor MAGA stan still believes that Donald Trump cares or ever did. So anyway, with that said, you guys know what to do, okay? You're liking the stream. You're sharing the stream right now. You're letting people know what you get up to on a Thursday, that you watch the Damage Report. Make sure to listen to this as a podcast, obviously. Give it 5 stars if you listen as a podcast. Let John know that he is loved and missed in his great time of dadhood. All right, that's it. With that, let's start with this.
I am not the president's lawyer. I will add, I am not Congress's prosecutor. The Justice Department works for the American people. Our job is to follow the facts and the law, and that is what we do.
That was Attorney General Merrick Garland sitting before the House Judiciary Committee, getting grilled by Republicans about things they're not even clear about and things they're mad about that they're not also clear about. Anything to distract, of course, from the fact that they're about to shut down the government because they don't like Kevin McCarthy now. There you have it. You got him on the stand, I guess. Got him in the Senate hearing, or the hearing, excuse me. And they're asking him some I guess tough questions. They are mad, especially about the special counsel, David Weiss, who was appointed to look into Hunter Biden's potential tax fraud, weapons charges, something that was decided by Merrick Garland to elevate at the request of David Weiss, to elevate this to a special counsel status. What Republicans had been asking for a very long time, but it's not good enough for them now. They're moving the goalposts and they're mad because apparently, according to them, Merrick Garland let statutes of limitations around these charges expire. And so now they're pissed. Take a look at one of the many lines of questioning that they're going to go into.
The Justice Department permitted statutes of limitations to expire. Every lawyer who's ever practiced understands the implications of allowing statutes of limitations to expire.
Prosecutors,
do you not even know as you sit here whether that occurred or not?
Prosecutors make appropriate determinations on their own. In this case, I left it to Mr. Weiss whether to bring charges or not. That would include whether to let statute of limitations expire or not, whether there was sufficient evidence to bring a case that was subject to the statute of limitations or not, whether there were better cases to bring or not.
What I'm wondering is why you guys let the statute of limitations lapse for those tax years that dealt with Burisma income.
There's one more fact that's important, and that is that this investigation was being conducted by Mr. Weiss, an appointee of President Trump. You will, at the appropriate time, have the opportunity to ask Mr. Weiss that question, and he will no doubt address it in the public report that will be transmitted to the Congress.
So there you have it, this back and forth about statutes of limitations, which is very important, and to reiterate that This David Weiss was assigned to the Hunter Biden case by Donald Trump. In 2018, when Donald Trump was president, this is what happened. So any dragging of the heels, that's on Donald Trump. That is on like the old administration. If anything, it seems like Biden, once again, the Biden administration has handed over all relevant documents. They are complying. Biden himself says he doesn't talk to Merrick Garland about this. They are actually expediting this, if anything, not only expediting, but elevating it. And Mondale, I can't watch this and not think about, you know, oh yeah, the weaponization of the DOJ, and they're so concerned about it. Remember when all the attorneys generals in the Trump administration were told to watch random YouTube videos about supposed election fraud in 2020, and they had to do deep dives into whether Italygate was a thing, and then they had to report back? I mean, Trump was a master at weaponizing the DOJ. If anything, Merrick Garland has been tiptoeing to precisely avoid this kind of a moment, and yet here he is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the entire Republican Party weaponized the government every chance they get. Think about what happened with the Bill Clinton situation. I mean, this is not new. Since Newt Gingrich controlled the House, this has been motor operandi for the Republican Party. We've seen it time and time again. Of course, Trump's tried to lock up all of his enemies. But even before Trump, we know about what they did to Hillary Clinton. We can't deny the fact that they were using the federal government, a hearing, to lower her ratings. They actually said it. Kevin McCarthy said it himself, his words. So, I mean, I'm not surprised here. What is funny, though, is how cool Merrick Garland is mostly during this interview, and this idea that I'm going to keep reminding you that it was your God, it was Trump who nominated Wise. One more piece of fact that he gave them was that, like you said, majority of this investigation took place under Trump's administration and nothing happened.
Yeah.
Nothing. So if you're concerned and frustrated about nothing happening, bring Bill Barr back up here and ask him why nothing happened, because he was the attorney general over all of that.
Yeah, exactly. Bring every former loyalist in. There's nothing there, but yet, you know, so if it's not statute of limitations, now they're mad that apparently, according to their special FBI whistleblower, remember, an FBI whistleblower came forward and said that David Weiss was not empowered to bring charges, and this was the problem. Now, the FBI is a pretty large bureau. This could have been anyone. We don't know who this person was, but Republicans are resting every bit of their argument on this supposed whistleblower, who, by the way, has been disproven by multiple legal scholars and obviously by the head of the DOJ, by Merrick Garland himself. Yeah, he does have the authority, and he did have the authority to bring charges. But take a look at their second angle of attack.
Are you aware that FBI officials have come before this committee and they have stated that there was a cumbersome bureaucratic process that Mr. Weiss had to go through to bring charges in another judicial district? You know that?
I'm not aware, but that's not true. There's nothing cumbersome about the process.
So those whistleblowers are lying to us under oath? Those whistleblowers are lying?
I didn't say that. Their description of the process is cumbersome is an opinion. It's not a fact question.
Right. And let's remember those words, cumbersome and bureaucratic. That's what government is. If you're going to conduct a real investigation that isn't just a sham investigation, you're going to have to go through a few hoops. You're going to have to go through the proper channels, because the FBI is not littered with loyalists, which obviously Trump, if he does get a second bite at the apple, will fix immediately. But there you go. And in fact, according to an FBI agent who has come forward, Thomas Sabachinsky, he said, "I was consistently aware that David Weiss had the authority in the U.S. to bring the charges where venue presented itself. The minute I got there in July of 2021, it was always the understanding and communication between David Weiss and myself that he had the authority to bring it on behalf of the department." Again, it is not a good look generally if you're working for the FBI and you're bringing a case forward that is not robust, that you know, in whichever jurisdiction Republicans want him to be charged in. But Mondale, this whole thing about, like, you know, and this is the thing I felt like we were doing throughout the Trump administration. One guy, you know, I think his name was, like, it wasn't Jeffrey Cluck, but like one guy deep in the supposed deep state that we all hate is a loyalist. This one whistleblower comes forward and, you know, call himself a whistleblower and says things are bureaucratic. And suddenly Republicans plant their flag on this, which is just like, it's just some lower lackey being like, no, I don't think so, you know, and that immediately that person gets elevated.
Yeah, elevated to this. I mean, like, first of all, we need a description of whistleblower, right? Right. Like the idea that you're not blowing a whistle saying that the federal government in the United States is cumbersome and bureaucratic. How is that a whistleblower? Like, we know that. Like, anybody that's done anything, have you lost your passport and tried to get it back? Right? I got a better one for you. The same congressman that just pronounced this as evidence that something is going on, try getting in touch with him by calling his local office and see how cumbersome and bureaucratic it is just to reach that congressperson. Get out of here. This is ridiculous. Like, this is child's play with our government and the fact that we are dealing with this. And me being super left, which should be happy about Republican Party falling apart at this rate. But the problem is I'm not, because it gives Democrats a pass to be as, you know, lazy as they want to be. What we're watching right now with the Democratic, I mean, is the problem of the way our government set up, the two-party systems and the power that they control. This is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know any or very few Republicans at the federal level that should have a job. Seriously.
Oh, God. Well, it gets worse because I want to just jump to this and then let's go to Representative Cohen for some pushback. But the last line of questioning, and this was off the Hunter Biden trail, but it was specifically laid, I guess, at the feet of Merrick Garland, was the idea that the Department of Justice is targeting Catholic groups. Never mind the fact that the most famous Catholic in this country is President Joe Biden, who they hate and they swear is corrupt and he's the head of some kind of crime ring. He'd be the last one to know. But apparently, and this is real, there have been overlaps over between extremist organizations and religious organizations like far right Catholic or groups, right? That is true, as we have seen, as you know, sort of white supremacists and Christian nationalist violence has coalesced, right? That is not lost on anybody. And there was a report issued, but of course Republicans are saying, no, you're going after Catholics. By the way, Merrick Garland himself is Jewish, and he opened his statement in this hearing talking about his background and the fact that his family had survived the Holocaust. So take a look at this exchange.
They say the department's been weaponized. Wasn't there an investigation of Mr. Gates and you didn't prosecute him?
Justice Department does not make comments about its investigation.
Well, associates, we're not weaponized. If we were weaponized, we'd have done it. That was a beautiful exchange there. It shows we didn't do that.
Okay, I actually meant the next thought about religious discrimination. Let's go into that. Sorry.
Attorney General, through the chair, I ask you, do you agree that traditional Catholics are violent extremists? Okay.
I have no idea what the traditional means here.
Catholics that go to church.
May I answer your question?
Yes.
The idea that someone with my family background would discriminate against any religion is so outrageous, so absurd.
Mr. Attorney General, it was your FBI question. That did this. It was your FBI that was sending, and we have the memos, we have the emails, we're sending undercover agents into Catholic churches.
Both I and the director of the FBI have said that we were appalled. Have said that we were appalled by that memo.
So then you agree that they're not extremists?
We were appalled by that memo.
Are they extremists or not, Attorney General?
I think that...
Are they extremists or not, Attorney General?
Everything in that memo is appalling.
Are they extremists or not? I'm asking a simple question. Say no if you think that was wrong.
Catholics are not extremists. No.
Okay, so I have a few issues with how that exchange went down, but supposedly multiple FBI, not supposedly, but supposedly this was a controversial statement and memo. Multiple FBI field offices were involved in drafting a controversial, again, this is according to the New York Post, so take that with a grain of sand. January 2023 internal memo suggesting traditionalist Catholic groups were potential hotbeds of domestic extremism. Two Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee alleged Wednesday that the memo was titled, interests of racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists in radical traditionalist Catholic ideology almost certainly presents new mitigation opportunities. Now, again, here's the problem with that exchange, right? Merrick Garland backed down. He said, no, Catholics aren't extremists, right? And he didn't stand up for the FBI, right? That he oversees. Look, FBI agents, Mondale, you tell me if I am off base here. Usually takes them like years to start opening anything into, I don't know, like white domestic extremist terrorism. Like, they've just recently admitted it is rising far faster than any other kind of hate group or extremist violence in this country. So if they're opening an investigation or writing this memo, you probably can assume it is an issue. And so Merrick Garland basically throws them under the bus and says he thinks that this memo is appalling, all because Republicans are backing him into a corner to say that. So I don't know. I just kind of hate this. It makes me hate both sides, sort of the centrist, you know, DOJ, and of course, obviously, Republicans. Oh, I think you muted yourself, Mondale.
Listen, I would tell everybody, if you are offended by what was in that memo about traditionalist Catholics being radical or potential hotbeds, then you should all really be offended how we talk about mosques in this country. Mm-hmm. We know our government monitors Muslim people for potential hotbeds or extremists. So I think this idea is really just saying, tell me you're racist without saying you're racist. Everybody's upset or freaking out that some parts of Catholic or Catholicism may be creating spaces where they're comfortable to racists and radicals. We know it's true. And I think the idea that Merrick Garland took this stand and gave in was absolutely ridiculous. He should have just screamed over Van Drew, who is a horrible human being, and told him, stop playing politics with an issue that is extremely important. We absolutely know that there are cases of radical traditionalist Catholics that are doing racially motivated and also showing up like white supremacists. Stop playing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he should have stuck to it. I mean, look, if it's his FBI, stand by them. Say, yeah, we like get real. You know what I mean? And like you can list, I don't know, if you're the attorney general, I would assume you should be able to rattle off like when there has been like sadly Christian based like extremism. Now, of course, he's not necessarily going to do that in this setting because of who he's, you know, going up against.
First off, as this hearing has shown, a small number of the department's cases get an outsized level of attention in politics. But the reality is, you preside over most of the federal system of mass incarceration. And every day in courtrooms around the country, including St. Louis, prosecutors who ultimately report to you are continuing to disproportionately prosecute disproportionately black and brown people for disproportionately low-level immigration and narcotics and firearm offenses. And under your watch, the federal incarceration rate has increased for the first time in nearly a decade. Meanwhile, corporate crime enforcement is lower than it was during the Trump administration. The department needs to rethink its entire approach to prosecution.
Oh, Representative Bush with some receipts, actually comparing Merrick Garland to the Trump administration, saying the prosecution of corporate crime is down and the prosecution of low level crimes, you know, small petty crimes, drug related crimes, that is up. And we all know who that disproportionately targets. Mondale, your reaction? I mean, this is just like suddenly like a dose of reality into this hearing.
Yeah, I mean, last night my wife and I were with Corey and her husband. So it's funny that we're covering that because we literally were talking about the shortcomings on our side and how we fail our base. And she was, you know, people of color. We were specifically talking about black men. But I think in this interview, she did a wonderful job of showing how you push back on administration and also showing that there's more to talk about. She goes on to talk about it. There's more to talk about than what's politically advantageous or what's sucking up all of the air in politics. And I think that's a fact. I mean, like these ideas and these questions that we needed to talk about, and I pay attention to politics a lot. It's my life. I didn't know that corporate crime prosecution was now under this administration.
Yeah.
And I definitely didn't know that the federal crime prison rate was rising under this administration. Those are important issues, and we definitely need to talk about it, especially when we see the shortcomings of equity in our justice system.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in this context, and she caveats it. I mean, she opens it by saying, you know, we see the outsized importance that certain so-called crimes are receiving versus every single day this justice system unfairly, you know, comes down on the backs of the poor black and brown Americans. And that's not news, I guess. That's just the status quo. She has some suggestions, and I love that she gets this in there. This will be our final clip on this.
And I urge you to take specific steps towards ending mandatory minimums and prosecutory misconduct waivers and actively supporting alternatives to incarceration, funding federal public defenders, use of clemency power, and reporting on disparities in federal prosecutions. I'm also deeply concerned about the Bureau of Prisons. Director Peters is not doing enough to address the rampant issues of abuse and mismanagement at the Bureau, which affects both correctional staff and people in custody.
So there she is. She's laying it all out and mandatory minimums, right? At least study how the justice system is impacting people based on their race, based on their class, right? Like, at least look into these things. And it's this invitation. And also, Mondale, I feel like it's an invitation to the Biden administration generally to deliver on a movement that is still so huge and present, which is the Black Lives Matter movement, that is so much bigger than just these flashpoints and these instances, right? It is a grand consensus, especially among young people in this country, that we have to make a change when it comes to the criminal justice system. Where is that change, President Biden? Where is that change, Merrick Garland?
Yeah, also we see someone who understands government beyond what's popular on YouTube, Facebook, or some crazy truth social, right? Like, this idea that she had this long list of things that she needed to say to the Department of Justice on behalf of St. Louis that were not got you moments. She literally was telling him in a way that you need to check into this. And also it kind of reminded me of what politics should be. Who knows? Like, this idea that we can hold even when we are the party in charge, i.e. our administration, talking about Biden, then we still have problems with this government that are negatively affecting the people that sent me here to represent them. Whereas when before that, the clips we saw, we just see people with gotcha moments, are Catholics extremists, or, you know, or why are you looking out for Biden, Biden's son? Why you drag your feet? Why you let statute of limitations pass? Not really doing serious politics. And then I think, you know, this is, unfortunately, we have become not just our people that love reality TV. We've become a people that live reality TV. It's like our lives, if it's not drama, it's not necessary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, who's going to be playing those clips on mainstream news of Cori Bush asking and suggesting some real concrete things? And let's be honest, if it was her yelling at Merrick Garland, if it was her, you know, trying to get gotcha moments off of him, we'd be having a very different conversation, and Republicans would be having a field day over this uppity black representative, you know, actually getting fiery as they're getting over some BS that it doesn't exist. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini here with you, as well as Mondale Robinson. We got a lot more to get into, including the continued decline of Ron DeSantis. Very sad, so sad. So turns out that DeSantis's war on woke is also a war on teachers, which makes sense because of how much he has demonized them in that state. And that's led to what is known as a brain drain. Basically, when people who are credentialed, people who have college degrees, they leave. They leave the state, they get out of Dodge. And that's what we're seeing. In fact, from the Florida Education Association head, Andrew Spahr, he called it one of the worst teacher and staff shortages in Florida's history. And we've also covered on TYT and the Damage Report, the fact that they're even tapping veterans and people who have no teaching credentials, but know how to use a gun. They're tapping them to fill in and sub for actual teachers. So before we give you what's going on, just know, underlying here, that Florida ranks 48th when it comes in the country when it comes to teacher pay. So that might have something to do with it. But in January 19, when DeSantis was first sworn into his first term as governor, there were 2,217 teacher vacancies at the K through 12 level in public schools. As he entered his second term in January 2023, that number ballooned to 5,294 vacancies, according to the FEA. This August, the FEA found the number of unfilled positions at a nearly staggering 7,000 positions. Now, would that have anything to do with the fact that he signed a bill that was basically a don't say gay bill, accusing teachers of being groomers if they talked at all about gender or sexuality? Yeah, probably. Yeah. So in 2022, that was 1467, HB 1467 required every elementary public school teacher, every public elementary school's website, to provide a list of all materials maintained in the school library and invites not just parents, but any resident of the county to file an objection. When the law neglects to mention specific penalties, it makes passing reference to Florida Statute 8847012, a pre-existing law classifying the dissemination of sexually obscene materials to minors as a felony. So again, this is part of that Don't Say Gay bill. It's this war on Florida's libraries. It is the right for any resident to basically come in and interrogate a teacher or a librarian for potentially disseminating sexually explicit content to kids. I mean, it's just wild stuff. And it makes a lot of sense that this is going on. There's more, there's higher education stuff too, but Mondale, just like at a time, when is it not a time that there are not teacher staffing shortages and we need more teachers in this country, right? And then you get Ron DeSantis, who, by the way, has appointed like members of Moms of Liberty to government positions in that state.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you have a war on woke, you need less teachers. I mean, the definition of woke in the context that we're using it, the historical context of it, is to be aware of and actively attentive to important societal issues, facts and issues. Who else other than teachers are going to give these kids facts? Definitely not going to happen at home because their mom and dads are too busy running to Trump and DeSantis rallies. So I think we're absolutely paying attention to a time. I wouldn't say it's the first time it's happened because we've seen the South ban books before. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the banning of books the last time is the reason we have so many people that believe that the Civil War was fought because of the Lost Cause or Northern aggression and not the true reason, which was slavery. That's how powerful banning books is. It's a negative thing, but it's that powerful. Two and three generations later, people really believe that the Lost Cause was a reason for fighting the war, even though every state that joined the Confederacy said slavery was their right, and it was the reason that they were separating from the North. So I think when you are trying to put to death facts and historical issues and in things that happen, you need to get rid of teachers. We need to call it what it is. It's not a war on woke. It's a war on people who can make other people woke, because we need everybody walking around in a slumber to believe the BS that we're selling them.
Yes, it's a war on education. And what teacher is going to want to teach just like, again, falsehoods and lies and by omission lies. And it's impacted higher education. Let's just go to this because the University Systems Honors College Board of Trustees like completely got a rehaul under DeSantis, which led to massive resignation. So the partisan board fired the college's president. This is for New College. This is the whole system of Honors College there in the state. Appointed a DeSantis ally in her place, and then voted to end the gender studies program because it's not just obviously histories of racism and slavery, but it's gender studies. And that signaled a sunsetting of tenure and aggressively recruited male students to undo what right wingers called the feminization of American colleges. That board takeover also drove 40% of the faculty to quit and a slew of classes to be canceled just days before the school year started. So this was, again, replacing his trustees on these college boards. And then what are you gonna do? What do you wanna stick it out and fight with people who don't believe in gender studies? I mean, like, it's a losing battle. Like, it's really, really tough to ask people to stay and fight. But DeSantis doesn't care. DeSantis has shrugged off any suggestions of impeding an educational, of an impending educational brain drain of the new college faculty departures. He said, if you're a professor in, like, you know, Marxist studies, that's not a loss for Florida. After signing a bill that defunded diversity programs, as we remember, in the state's colleges, he suggested that students who disagree should, quote, go to Berkeley. Yeah, go to Berkeley, guys. Come to California. I don't care. We need you. We want you. Like, it more for us, I guess, right? But that's, you know, a massive loss for the state of Florida. And this is a physical loss of the lack of teachers. He also said, you know, we need education, not indoctrination in this country. But that's just like, then you have veterans coming to teach. I mean, no disrespect to vets and their need for jobs and, you know, truly need for jobs. But this is not it. That is not the way. However, I want to just pivot to this because there's another reason Ron DeSantis is full of it. And we're all very happy that his campaign is tanking. And that is that he's a liar. He's been a liar about COVID stats. He's been a liar about his actual war on woke, which isn't a war on education, really. And he's a liar about crime in the state of Florida. So he's been touting the fact that Florida has a 50-year crime low. Take a look.
We do not surrender to the woke mob.
Policing in the spotlight today.
This morning, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is in New York.
The first of a three-city tour.
In Florida, our crime rate is at a 50-year low.
Right. So he's been touting this over and over and over again. And actually, it's not accurate. And in fact, someone from his own office said that they toiled back and forth with the fact that this was not accurate data, and we'll go into why. The governor's office wanted to say outright that we were at a 50-year crime low. This is according to a staffer. We told the department leadership verbally and in writing that it was not accurate because of the deficiencies in data, one of the former staffers said. We went back and forth several times, and we agreed after being heavily pushed to say we were trending in that direction. But he never says trending in that direction. He just says we're at a 50-year low. The reason is that the incident reporting changed. Federal government changed it from reporting only the most serious crimes with multiple incidents with multiple crimes to under a new system where each crime is reported. So a little bit more on that change. The changes required a lot more technical reporting from Florida's more than 400 local law enforcement agencies, some of which remain unable to produce the level of detail until they get costly technology upgrades. As a result, many are just not reporting. Law enforcement agencies representing just 57% of the state's population initially reported under the new system, meaning law enforcement agencies representing more than 40% of the state are not reporting specific data. For those agencies, the state uses imputed data. And that's just an algorithm that kind of like estimates. It just like, it's just, yeah, this is basically what it is. And the Marshall Project, which obviously follows criminal justice and argues for reform, they map this on what areas just aren't reporting crime in the state of Florida. So this is, again, more than 40% of Florida's districts or counties are just not reporting. In 2021, a quarter of Florida's counties were missing in the summary crime data collected by the Department of Law Enforcement. And here are the 16 counties in black there. You see 0%, which is just wild. The Marshall Project summed it up by saying, DeSantis can't be sure that Florida has achieved a 50-year crime rate low because the state itself doesn't know what the crime trends are due to flawed data. These methodological clashes in Florida's crime reporting create gaps in information and make it difficult to claim that any statewide crime trends, let alone that the state has reached a 50-year crime rate low. Mondale, I'm not clearly an expert on all how to report the different kinds of crimes. I didn't know there was this switch since the 70s, but when your own staff is saying this isn't accurate, please don't report it as such. And then you do, that's very damning.
Yeah, I mean, but who cares about facts, right? We're talking DeSantis chasing Trump supporters. He's not looking for facts, right? And actually, he's probably using the wrong data. He's probably saying that, oh, since we have 7,000 vacancies in teacher, then crime is down. Because if you're at war with woke and teachers are teaching people how to be woke, then your enemies are not criminals. Your enemies are teachers. So, you know, maybe Ron DeSantis is right, but he's using the wrong, our definition of crime is wrong. I am so tired of Republicans being able to twist and use what we call them untruths now, lies. Lies is what they are. And there was a time where you, if you got caught lying like this, then you would be ousted or you wouldn't be taken serious. Right. But unfortunately, we see what it means to be a liar, i.e. elected officials from New York in Congress right now running for re-election with an entire resume made up on the internet, right? So the idea that you could be a Republican and be filled with lies, and I'm not even talking about Donald Trump, right? We're talking about a sitting congressman who did nothing that he said he did except for rob a veteran.
I just love that you're bringing up George Santos right now, because there's never not a good time to bring up George Santos.
Always digging him.
He's always there because it's always like, oh yeah, whatever Republicans wanted to say, you just kind of tap them and go, hey, remember George Santos? Yeah, anyway, back to whatever BS you were talking about, because it's true. I feel like he's an op. Like if he's a Democratic operative, which I'm surprised Republicans haven't called him at this point, like that wouldn't, like I'd be like, okay, good on Dems for showing how easy it is to lie and be elected as a Republican in this country. Just wild. Anyway, yeah, it is. Look, I've heard that stat a lot, the 50-year low, and I'm glad that we're finally busting that myth. I just wonder if on the next debate stage, Mondale, are we going to hear whichever news outlet is interviewing them, is asking the questions, are we going to hear them actually, you know, bring some receipts to DeSantis? Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini here, Mondale Robinson. We have breaking news. That's right. Succession in real life has a different ending, and Kendall is stepping up, people. If you don't know what any of that means, just know Rupert Murdoch has resigned or transitioned at the young, tender age of 92 out of the role of chairman of Fox News Corporation, or Fox Corporation and Fox News, lest we confuse them. He has a statement. I am writing to let you all know that I have decided to transition to the role of chairman emeritus at Fox and News. For my entire professional life, I've been engaged daily with the news and ideas, and that will not change. Damn it. But the time is right for me to take on a different role, knowing that we have truly talented teams and a passionate principled leader in Lachlan, who will become the sole chairman of both companies. Neither excessive pride nor false humility are admirable qualities, but I am truly proud of what we have achieved collectively through the decades. I owe much to my colleagues whose contributions to our success have sometimes been unseen outside the company, but are deeply appreciated by me. Very much unseen. Like if you don't like Fox News, it's not because they like, you know, peddle lies. It's because you're not seeing the success, i.e. money. We'll talk about that money a little bit. Might be under threat. Murdoch also went on to say something very fun. That the battle over freedom of speech and freedom of thought had never been more intense, and that his family remained committed to that cause. He criticized both contemptuous elites and the media in quote cahoots with them for pushing narratives rather than seeking the truth. Before we get to Lachlan, just Murdoch saying that elites and the media, I mean, Mondale, it's funny because he says he's had a hand in the news more directly, and I believe it because that line is exactly the line that is peddled every single day on Fox News, that everyone behind those desks are not themselves elites, and that somehow every single one of them are also not working for the media.
This statement, as your retirement state, I'm over here losing my mind, the idea that a billionaire is talking about the elites. A billionaire who happens to have made his money off of media empires. What are we talking about? Like, you can only sell that to Fox viewers and them feel like, oh, he's one of us. What are you talking about? You are talking about yourself. You're literally, you're incriminating yourself in this statement. It is absolutely disgusting. And the only thing he said is his people are owed more than he is. I wish more lawsuits were filed against Fox for the BS they're pushing. And the idea that the FEC or anybody who regulates TV allows us to continue to cause Fox News is baffling to me.
Well, we're going to get to some of those lawsuits because there are more coming down the pike other than the Dominion lawsuit, which arguably, although maybe it was a sexual assault the massive sexist allegations against Tucker Carlson led to Tucker Carlson leaving Fox News Corporation. But look, again, I just go back to Succession. The board's had their way. The board has spoken. The board is bigger than just Rupert Murdoch and his family. Although his son did have something to say. And again, he's going to be the head of both of these. I believe it's David Murdoch does not get anything in this role. He has always been sort of the less extremist. Sorry, James Murdoch, who's been sort of the less extreme son. Lachlan is seen as like, yeah, he buys hook, line, and sinker that they are an embattled elite. And he says, on behalf of Fox and the News Corporation, board of directors, leadership teams, and all the shareholders who've benefited from his hard work, I congratulate my father on his remarkable 70-year career. We thank him for his vision, his pioneering spirit, his steadfast determination, and the enduring legacy he leaves to the companies he founded and countless people he has impacted. Oh yeah, there have been countless. We are grateful that he will serve as chairman emeritus and know he will continue to provide valued counsel to both companies. In other words, he'll still be calling the shots, and I'm a little daddy's boy, and I am a fail son, and here we go again. He's still going to be around, chairman emeritus. Lachlan is going to be inheriting that. Before we, let's move on, though, because there might be some clues as to why Murdoch has resigned. A little too much heat on the Fox News Corporation, and a few too many lawsuits are coming at them. Again, this is on the heels of that Dominion lawsuit that they did lose. Now there's another voting system. Smartmatic has also claimed that they've been defamed by Fox News and hosts at Fox News, and they are also suing. This is actually from one of the reps, lawyers for Smartmatic, saying, I can think of an analogy like mafia boss ordering one of his lieutenants, take out Johnny Two Bones, that's your instructions. J. Eric Connolly, who's representing Smartmatic in its $2.7 billion lawsuit, said in a downtown Manhattan courtroom. He continued, the mafia boss doesn't say, I want you to whack him on this day. I want you to use this tool. I want this henchman to do it. The mafia boss doesn't give direction of exactly how the henchman carries out the hit, but unquestionably we would all say the mafia boss participated in the hit when it happened. Exact same thing happened here. Damn. He continued and he deliberately fingered Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch. He said Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch ordered a hit. They saw the ratings take a huge dive. They saw the stock price take a dive. So Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch said, oh, if we aren't embracing this disinformation, it's going to be a problem. So they ordered their lieutenants, Suzanne Scott and Jay Wallace, quote, you're taking out Smartmatic. You are embracing this disinformation about voting machines. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. So this is happening in the courtroom behind the scenes. Mondale, Dominion wins, arguably for a far lesser settlement than they asked for. But now you've got $2.7 billion. And if I'm on the board, yeah, maybe it was the wrong move to directly name Smartmatic and Dominion and start casting a bunch of doubt on these voting systems that could come for me. You can be more broad with their propaganda. They always are every single day online without necessarily naming company names. But this is how we're getting justice around Fox. We were always wondering how it might happen, and here it happens.
Yeah, I'm super excited that they took that step further, trying to make their conspiracy sound true by naming companies by name, by naming people by name. I'm not happy that people were tortured. people were stalked and doxxed, and what happened to the mother and daughter combo in Georgia.
Yeah.
But I am happy that there are people see that there's a way to get repercussions. It is absolutely disgusting that they did this, and I know for a fact that Smartmatic will not stop until they win this lawsuit. And the board absolutely see what's coming, and they know this is the beginning, not the end. Maybe the end for 92-year-old Murdoch, but definitely not the lawsuits that he allowed to be formatted. And I'm super happy about what's happening. I am.
Yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, the board wants their money. They want to deliver for their shareholders. And as out of touch with reality as I think that entire world is, I guess they have their limits. And when advertisers are jumping ship because people are, you know, peddling all this like racist conspiracy theory stuff, and when you're getting lawsuits and you're taking heat for those same conspiracy theories, yeah, it's nice to know there's a little bit of accountability there. There's also accountability when it comes to who's invested in something like Fox News Corporation, because yes, people are invested. So there is another very interesting Fox News lawsuit that is coming at the corporation, might have something to do with Rupert Murdoch's recent resignation. But New York City's pension funds and the state of Oregon, both of whom are invested in their Fox News Corporation to the tune of, in terms of New York City, $28 million. State of Oregon had about $5.2 million in shares of Fox. Now they're mad specifically for their behavior in 2020. So this is a lawsuit which was filed under seal in the Delaware Court of Chancery, and named Fox Corporation board members and its executives as defendants, and accused the media company of having, quote, chosen to invite robust defamation claims with potentially huge financial liability and potentially larger business repercussions rather than disappoint viewers of Fox News. In other words, deliver for, again, the shareholders, and it's not good for my dollar, it's not good for my money when you get, you know, you're catching all these lawsuits. The New York City Comptroller Brad Lander said in a statement, Fox's board of directors has blatantly disregarded the need for journalistic standards and failed to put safeguards in place despite having a business model that invites defamation litigation. A business model that invites defamation litigation is brilliant. A lack of journalistic standards and a proper strategy to mitigate defamation has clearly harmed Fox's reputation and threatens their bottom line and long-term profitability. What about Oregon? So their Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum said something similar in a separate statement, said the board of Fox Corporation took a massive risk in pursuing profits by perpetuating and peddling known falsehoods. The directors' choices exposed themselves and the company to liability and exposed their shareholders to significant risks. That is the crux of our lawsuit, and we look forward to making our case in court. Here's my question, Mondale. Let's keep going. Dominion, Smartmatic, what about on behalf of millions of immigrants in this country? What about on behalf of, you know, I don't know, Black Americans who've been demonized by Fox News year after year after year? What about all of, what about AOC being defamed? What about like all of the people that they have basically defamed? Can we get some class action situation going on here?
I mean, I think we're literally looking at the basis, the footsteps for it. I mean, like when the attorney said the mob boss does not tell you specifically how and when to do it, when you're saying and demonizing Black men the way you demonize it, I feel like I have a lawsuit against Fox, me and all the other Black men in this country, right? Like, and we should absolutely be everybody except for the Black men who go on Fox. They don't have a lawsuit. Like, they excluded from the class action. And then other people as well. I mean, other groups should absolutely join suit. I'm being facetious, but not really.
Right.
I mean, like, this is absolutely how we get rid of the problems that our government will not regulate.
Yeah, and it's also kind of a bigger question as to boards themselves, right? Corporate boards themselves notoriously do not have workers in those corporations on the board. That has been a push from many advocacy organizations to try and get, you know, Amazon workers on the board of Amazon, Microsoft workers, whatnot. Like this would be huge, because if workers, if people are also invested, then suddenly we have actually a little bit more legs to stand on. Obviously, corporations don't want this when it comes to our dollar, right? If workers are getting a certain promise, a certain share, right now UAW is asking for their prosperity and the workers' prosperity to be tied to the profits being made by the big three automaker companies, right? Then they suddenly have more let's say, political and economic cachet to bring some kind of lawsuit like this. So it sucks that it has to be people who are invested in Fox News Corporation who have this, you know, at least the money and the leg to stand on to bring these lawsuits. But I feel like it could bode well for the future of democratizing corporate boards. And then also, yes, bringing class action lawsuits against, you know, look, if we can't get any kind of federal regulation, if the, you know, if like the FCC can't come down on Fox for peddling disinformation, then, you know, like bringing lawsuits is the last resort here.
Yeah. And I think this is the way. It seems like this may be the only way we're gonna hold these people accountable, board members of these companies and also these large corporations. And I think this is beautiful if you can consider what we know now about corporate crimes. Like they're at a lower rate being prosecuted now than they were 4 years ago. So I think America is super litigious. Let's see what we can do for the people and how we can create funds. Maybe reparations come from these corporations. They benefited from slavery anyway and all other harms.
Why not? Let's go. Well, that is the time we have for this hour of the Damage Report. There's more in the aftermath. If you're on linear, this is it. YouTube, we continue. We got just some Trump stooges being the worst. Don't go anywhere. We'll see you in the aftermath.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.